Washington caught off guard after the January the 6th committee announces a surprise last-minute hearing into the Capitol attack. Unlike the previous five hearings, the committee has not said what it's about or who will testify. Plus, new developments in the fight over abortion as judges in two states blocked laws that were intended to outlaw the practice when Roe was overturned. And we'll get a live report from Ukraine after a Russian airstrike on a crowded mall kills at least a dozen people. Many are still missing. Good morning and welcome to Way Too Early on this Tuesday, June the 28th. I'm Caddy Kay, sitting in for Jonathan Lemire. Speculation is swirling after the abrupt announcement from the January the 6th committee that it plans to hold its sixth public hearing today. The only thing the committee has revealed is the hearing will, quote, present recently obtained evidence and receive witness testimony. The Washington Post reports that even some senior committee staff have been kept out of the loop. Three sources tell the Post that the secrecy is due in part to credible threats against a witness. The committee announced last week that it was taking a break until the middle of July and yesterday gave just 24 hours notice about the hearing that's scheduled for 1 o'clock this afternoon. And to that, the fact that Congress is in the midst of a two-week recess. Key Watergate figure John Dean tweeted, quote, better be a big deal. There was only one surprise witness during the Senate Watergate Committee hearings on July the 16th, 1973. An unannounced witness appeared, Alex Butterfield, who testified to Nixon's secret taping system, forever changing history. Much more on that story straight ahead. Meanwhile, the legal fight over abortion rights is happening now at the state level after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Yesterday, judges in Louisiana and Utah temporarily blocked trigger laws that ban the procedure following lawsuits by abortion rights advocates. According to the New York Times, there are at least 16 states that have trigger laws in effect or that will soon take effect. We should note that Wisconsin's ban on abortion stems from a law still on the books from 1849. Yes, you got that right, 1849. But the state's governor and attorney general have said they will not enforce it. Abortion rights groups have filed lawsuits in several states, but legal experts say those challenges are only likely to delay the law from taking effect. The Biden administration is vowing to protect what remains of abortion access, but the president is facing mounting pressure from members of his own party who say the administration didn't do enough before Roe was overturned. NBC News chief White House correspondent Kristen Welker has the latest.
President Biden at critical diplomatic talks as the administration grapples with intensifying fallout over abortion rights back home.
We will do everything within our power as an administration through the executive branch to ensure that women have access to the medication they need.
The secretaries of Health and Human Services, Labor, and Treasury writing a joint letter to insurers saying the Affordable Care Act requires contraception coverage. The president and top Democrats are also now trying to make abortion rights a top midterm issue, aiming to energize critical voters, including suburban women. But some progressive Democrats saying simply telling Americans to go vote for Democrats is too little, too late.
I do believe that there has been a weak Democratic strategy in the past, and we cannot continue to use those same playbooks.
We pressed the HHS secretary.
What do you say to Democrats who say the administration's strategy is weak and ineffective?
There is nothing that would preclude us from going to the mat, going to the nth degree to make sure that we protect un-Americans' access to care.
Polling shows 56% of Americans say they oppose the Supreme Court's decision, but Republicans taking a victory lap.
What the court did in effect was return this very controversial issue to the people and their representatives.
Arguing issues including soaring inflation will have a bigger impact on American voters.
They're going to have a high opinion on inflation, the policies the Democrats have gone, high gas prices, a border that's not secure, crime.
I've just been around the country and everybody is talking about those gas prices. Okay, let's look at news overseas now. President Joe Biden plans to announce an increase of U.S. troops in Poland while he's in Europe for a NATO summit. According to several officials, the decision could affect the number of troops deployed in the Baltic states of Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia. The president may also announce the expansion of the U.S. Navy's presence in Spain by adding two ships over the next few years. Meanwhile, in Ukraine, at least 18 people were killed and 59 injured when Russian missiles hit a crowded shopping mall in the central part of the country yesterday. President Volodymyr Zelensky says more than 1,000 people were inside the mall at the time of the attack. In a Telegram message, Zelensky called it, quote, one of the most daring terrorist attacks in European history, adding, quote, the number of victims is impossible to imagine. Local officials say the death toll is likely to go up as rescuers are still scouring through the debris. Leaders at the G7 summit condemned the attack, calling it abominable and vowing unwavering support for Ukraine. The UN Security Council has scheduled an emergency meeting later today to discuss the attack. And joining us now from central Ukraine is NBC News' correspondent, Alison Barber. Alison, you're there at the scene of the attack. What's the latest this morning?
Yeah, Katie, about 20 minutes ago, air raid sirens sounded here, and we, as well as all the rescuers who were working inside, were told to evacuate over to this other side of the street. Right now, they say at least 36 people are still missing. 18 people died when two missiles landed and hit directly this shopping center. The efforts to find any of the people missing, they are still very much ongoing. But again, right now, and you see some of the teams here, everyone has had to sort of take shelter between these buildings until there is an all clear after the air raid siren in the event of the potential for a second, a follow-up strike on this area. We spoke to the general prosecutor of Ukraine this morning, and she told us that they have a number of teams here looking at all sorts of different potential crimes. She says that she believes, based on what they know right now, this could potentially be a crime against humanity. We believe at least 1,000 people were inside this shopping center when those missiles hit yesterday afternoon. President Zelensky has called this a terror attack. He says that there was no military or strategic value or any reason to hit this area. He says the only people here were people inside shopping, just trying to live a normal life. Caddy?
Yeah. The Pentagon saying that they think that there were as many as 60 Russian missile strikes across Ukraine over the weekend. Why the sudden uptick in violence, Alison? Any ideas?
So we were in Kyiv this weekend and arrived on scene a couple hours after two missiles struck a residential area, one hitting a 9-story apartment building, killing one person, another striking just outside in the playground area of a kindergarten. Ukrainian officials will tell you they think that they're seeing some of this uptick right now because it is some sort of warped show of force where the Russian Federation is trying to intimidate Ukrainian citizens and also send a message to leaders meeting in Germany at the G7 summit as they are considering additional sanctions. Caddy?
Alison Barber there. Thank you very much. Those images from that shopping mall, awful. Very hard to imagine how anybody got out alive from that. Still ahead, a disturbing discovery in San Antonio, Texas. We'll have the latest on what the city's mayor is calling a horrific human tragedy. And a key figure in the plot to overturn the 2020 election gets a surprise visit from federal agents. Those stories and a check on the weather coming right back.
Get the latest updates on this year's high-stakes election with MSNBC's How to Win 2024 newsletter. When you subscribe, you'll get expert analysis on key races sent straight to your inbox, including articles written by the host of the How to Win podcast, Jennifer Palmieri. Subscribe today at msnbc.com/win.
It was a time of pride for the gay community.
I felt like I was part of a movement to liberate ourselves.
Then came a mysterious and devastating disease.
The latest figures from Los Angeles County.
We were describing evidence of a new acquired immune deficiency syndrome.
This is a story of strength and resilience.
This is our deciding moment. Together, we are greater than AIDS.
Commitment to life. Sunday, April 28th at 9 p.m. Eastern on MSNBC and streaming now on Peacock.
Three people are in police custody after at least 46 people were found dead inside a semi-truck in San Antonio, a scene investigators called a horrific human tragedy. Authorities were alerted to the scene last night when a worker in a nearby building heard a cry for help. First responders say the worker found the trailer with doors partially opened and a number of people dead inside.
At this time, we have processed approximately 46 bodies that have been triaged and tagged and declared deceased at this time. Fortunately, we were able to transport 16 people. 12 of those are adults and 4 pediatric. All of them were conscious at the time upon transportation.
4 pediatrics, that means 4 children. Authorities say they are unsure of the exact number of people originally inside the trailer, adding that a more extensive search of the surrounding areas is expected to take place in the coming days. An Amtrak train carrying more than 200 passengers crashed into a dump truck yesterday, derailing in rural Missouri. The train hit the truck as it blocked a public crossing with no lights shortly before 1 p.m. It happened about 100 miles north of Kansas City. 2 locomotives and 8 passenger cars derailed, killing at least 3 people and injuring more than 50. The train was traveling from Los Angeles to Chicago. The crash marks the second deadly incident for the railroad service in just 2 days, including a train collision with a passenger car in Brentwood, California, that killed 3 and seriously injured 2. The Supreme Court has ruled in favor of a former high school football coach who left his job after the school district asked him to stop kneeling and praying on the field after games. The school district claims it was trying to avoid the appearance of endorsing a religious point of view. But the Supreme Court yesterday ruled the district discriminated against private religious speech. Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote for fellow conservatives in the 6-3 decision, saying the former coach's prayers are protected by the Constitution's guarantees of free speech and religious exercise. In a dissent for the court's liberal minority, Justice Sonia Sotomayor called the decision misguided, quote, because it elevates the religious rights of a school official who voluntarily accepted public employment and limits that public employment and the limits that public employment entails over those of his students. 5 more states will hold midterm primary elections today. Primaries will be held in Colorado, Illinois, Oklahoma, Utah, and New York. Mississippi will hold runoffs today, and Nebraska's first district will hold a special election. In Illinois, mega donors are spending millions of dollars to influence which Republican candidate will face the state's incumbent Democrat governor, J.B. Pritzker. One of those big spenders is Pritzker himself, the billionaire governor, along with a Democratic group have been trying to bolster a far-right candidate who was just endorsed by former President Trump. Meanwhile, another billionaire, the founder of the hedge fund firm Citadel, Ken Griffin, has spent $50 million trying to get the more moderate Richard Ervin through to November. Ervin's candidacy hasn't taken off, and Griffin recently announced he was moving his company to Florida. Money in these elections. In New York, Governor Kathy Hochul is facing 2 primary challenges, Congressman Tom Suozzi and New York City public advocate Jermaine Williams. 4 Republicans are running to flip the state, including Congressman Lee Zeldin and Andrew Giuliani, who's the son of Rudy Giuliani. Meanwhile, in Colorado, 2 Republicans are running to unseat Senator Michael Bennett. Business owner Joe Odier, is running a moderate campaign, while his opponent, State Representative Ron Hanks, is a vocal election denier. He was at the Capitol on January the 6th. Similar to Illinois, Democrats in Colorado have tried to push for the more extreme conservative candidate to win. You wonder whether that's occasionally a risky strategy. Still ahead, we have an update on the WNBA star who's being held in Russia, and Major League Baseball dishes out suspensions for a massive brawl, and we'll have the highlights from the first day of Wimbledon. Way Too Early. We'll be right back.
Here on
MSNBC. We are staying on top of several fast-moving stories.
Today's news requires more facts.
A new report finds the climate crisis is getting much worse.
More context.
We are seeing record numbers of people crossing into the United States just in the southern border.
And more ground covered.
The mission will continue to carry out regime change in the Gaza Strip.
The world's never been harder to understand. That's why it's never been more important to try. MSNBC. Understand more.
Go beyond the headlines with the new MSNBC app. Get real-time analysis from live blogs to in-depth essays, video highlights from your favorite shows, and the latest updates on the 2024 election. Visit msnbc.com/app to download.
A criminal trial for WNBA star Brittany Griner will begin on Friday in Russia. A Moscow court revealed the date yesterday following Griner's appearance for a preliminary hearing. Griner was arrested at an airport in the country on February the 17th after Russian officials said they found vape cartridges containing cannabis oil in her luggage. Griner has been ordered to remain in custody for the duration of her trial. The U.S. government has argued that she is being wrongfully detained by Russia. Turning now to some early NBA off-season drama, Kyrie Irving is picking up his $37 million player option to return to the Brooklyn Nets next season, telling The Athletic yesterday, quote, "Normal people keep the world going, but those who dare to be different lead us into tomorrow." Meanwhile, ESPN reports veteran guard John Wall has agreed to a buyout with the Houston Rockets and plans to sign a free agent deal with the Los Angeles Clippers. NBA free agency opens Thursday night. Major League Baseball has handed down 12 suspensions in the wake of Sunday's brawl in Anaheim between the Los Angeles Angels and the Seattle Mariners. Angels interim manager Phil Nevin receiving the most significant suspension, a 10-game ban for pitcher Andrew Wance throwing at the Mariners' Jesse Winker, while warnings were in place for both teams. Winker received a 7-game ban, while Wance was suspended for 3. Guys, no brawling on the pitch. To another night of comeback baseball in the Bronx, the New York Yankees used a 6-run seventh inning to notch a league-leading 23rd come-from-behind victory. They beat the Oakland A's 9-5. Meanwhile, in Toronto, the Blue Jays halted the Red Sox's winning streak at 7 games. Toronto's star, Kevin Gausman, matched a career high with 10 strikeouts as the Blue Jays launched 3 home runs on the way to a 7-2 victory. Boston off to a bad start to a stretch in which they face division rivals Toronto, Tampa Bay, and New York 20 times in 23 games. I'm sorry. Now to major tennis competition. Phew, thank God we got through the baseball. Now to major tennis competition and the first day of play at the All England Club. It was an early test for top-seeded Novak Djokovic, who needed 4 sets to seal a first-round victory in his bid for a 4th consecutive Wimbledon championship and 7th overall at the grass court Grand Slam. 2-time Wimbledon champ Andy Murray overcame a slow start, feeding off the energy of a home crowd and earning a spot in the second round. And on the women's side, a share of the British spotlight for US Open champion Emma Raducanu, who marked her centre court debut with a straight set victory. Looks lovely there at Wimbledon. Time now for the weather. Let's go to meteorologist Michelle Grossman for the forecast. Michelle, what have we got coming up?
Hi there, Kathy. So great to see you. Well, we're relatively quiet today, which is good news. We've been so busy for so many weeks, but we are watching some wet weather in the south from the south central states, the southwest into the southeast. It's all due to an area of low pressure that's sort of parking itself over the area. So really slow moving cold front's going to bring showers and storms. Could see some heavy rainfall as well. Very disorganized. We also have a disorganized area of showers and storms in the Gulf. That's going to enhance some rainfall in eastern Texas tomorrow. So we could see pockets of heavy rain, could see some flash flooding with those heavy downpours up to 2 to 3 inches. That's what we're going to see as we go throughout the next several days, because that's going to stay parked for a while. Also tracking the tropics, starting to heat up a bit. This is potential tropical cyclone 2. I know that's a lot of words. It's just a way to track this system. Could become our next tropical storm. That would be Bonnie. We're looking at winds at tropical storm force winds at 40 miles per hour. We just don't have that area of circulation closed, the low closed. So we're seeing it still at that name, but moving west at 23 miles per hour. And it's going to move move off to the west. It's going to impact the Windward Islands today, eventually into Venezuela. And then we're going to see it moving to the west into Central America by Sunday a.m. But we could see it become that tropical storm body later on today. Taking a look at the rest of the forecast here, we're looking at better conditions in terms of the temperatures in the northwest. So hot yesterday with temperatures in the 80s and 90s. Those hot temperatures are further down to the south. So Los Angeles, say 89 degrees. Still watching some monsoon moisture into the southwest. 108 today. It's going to feel a little bit warmer than that. Again, we're watching those storms in the along the Gulf Coast, the South Central states. The Northeast looking so good with temperatures in the 70s, the 80s, the Great Lakes, the Ohio Valley, low dew points. So a really nice day. We're going to have another nice day before we really start to heat things up too. And then we're looking at the chance for some showers and thunderstorms as we head towards parts of the Northern Plains. So dangerous heat today. We're looking at areas of heat advisories from Fresno to Bakersfield, Santa Barbara, down in Santa Ana. And then we're looking at 14 million people impacted. This is really rare for this part of the country. So the concern is we don't have air conditioning. We don't have ways to cool off. We're going to have those fans going as we go throughout the afternoon, but it's going to lift. So it's not going to last very long, which is good news. Comfortably cool though, Caddy, in the Northeast. We're looking at Washington, D.C., where you are 82 degrees. That's 5 degrees below average. So enjoy it.
Loving that. 82 degrees here. Thank you, Michelle. Same.
Sure.
Okay, still ahead, new reporting related to the January the 6th attack on the Capitol. An attorney who helped develop former President Trump's strategy to overturn the election says his phone has been seized by the FBI. We'll have that, and we'll talk about what to expect during today's House Select Committee hearing. We're going to be back in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to Way Too Early. It's 5:30 on the East Coast, 2:30 out west. I'm Caddy Kay in for Jonathan Lemire. John Eastman, the lawyer and Trump ally who helped advise the former president on efforts to overturn the 2020 election, says he's had his phone seized by the FBI. In court documents filed yesterday, an attorney for Eastman said federal agents executed a search warrant as he was leaving a New Mexico restaurant with his wife and a friend last Wednesday night. According to the filing, agents patted Eastman down, took his phone and, quote, forced him to unlock it. He is now fighting to have his phone returned, arguing that the seizure was unlawful. It's worth noting this took place the same day that federal agents searched the home of Jeffrey Clark, the former Justice Department official Trump briefly considered appointing as acting attorney general. Joining us now, co-founder of Punchbowl News, John Bresnahan. John, thanks for getting up early for us. Eastman, key figure, of course, in the Capitol Riot Committee's case that the former president attempted to block the peaceful transfer of power. What do we read into the fact that his phone has been seized?
Yeah, this is a big deal. I mean, you know, they're complaining it's dramatic that they, you know, grabbed him outside of a restaurant. But Eastman has not complied with the January 6th committee. He took the fifth over 120 times, I believe, for the committee. And also they had to go to court to get a bunch of emails of his. So he's had his emails also were taken by the select committee after a court battle. So, you know, this is a pivotal guy, as you noted. This is after Jeffrey Clark, who was part of a plot by some Trump allies to install Clark at the top of the Justice Department to bolster Trump's case that, you know, the election, there was fraud, false case. So, you know, look, this is clearly the Justice Department is stepping up its criminal investigation, which is parallel to what the January 6th Select Committee is doing. So, you know, this is a big moment. And, you know, they really seem to be picking up the pace here. So we'll have to keep an eye on what they're doing.
And what do you think they might be looking for in the phone? Any specifics?
Well, you know, Eastman was in the middle of everything. Eastman was one of the originators of the plot to name alternate electors, false electors, if you would, and then have Pence use those to have then Vice President Pence allow a challenge to the election on January 6th that just stopped the certification of President Joe Biden's Electoral College victory. So this was a critical, you know, player in this whole thing. He had Trump's ear. He was in the middle of everything. Trump, in fact, was, you know, putting him on the phone with other folks saying, you know, talk to Eastman. He knows everything. This is, he's a well-known conservative lawyer. He was a big player in this whole scheme. So, you know, he's an important figure if there is some, you know, some kind of criminal action by the Justice Department over the false elector scheme.
And John, the House committee going to hold that surprise hearing later today. Secrecy around it reportedly due in part to credible security threats against the witness. What more can you tell us about this hearing today?
Yeah, we did. We reported last night, we broke the news last night that it's going to the witness, the surprise witness is going to be Cassidy Hutchinson, who was the former executive assistant to then White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Now, Hutchinson is a young woman. She's in her 20s, and you see her here. There's been a couple of video snippets of her so far in the testimony, but she was in the middle of everything. She was, you know, Meadows' alter ego, if you will. She was in all these meetings. She was in a meeting in December 2021 with that Trump had with some House members on, you know, on challenging the election results. She was involved in Trump in the effort, Meadows' effort to intervene in Georgia, where Trump, of course, called the Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and said, you know, you got to find me 11,000 votes. I mean, she was a player on everything. She was a witness to everything. So this is an important witness for the committee. Now, again, we have some of the backstory. We'll be reporting at 6 a.m. on Punchbowl News that there were security threats surrounding Hutchinson. She's testified to the committee on multiple times. She's been deposed by the committee on multiple times. So she's an important witness, and this is somebody they wanted to get out there. I think this is going to be a very credible witness. I know her. I think this is somebody who the committee is, you know, and the public, when they see her, they're going to believe what she has to say.
But John, why do it like this? Why announce last week that they're taking a break until July and then suddenly slot her in with almost no notice?
Yeah, that's interesting. We don't have the full picture of that from the committee. There's some thought maybe it's because she's involved in, and Meadows was involved in the Georgia phone call, and there's a Fulton County grand jury looking at that. There's some thought about that. There's some thought about maybe they wanted to get her testimony onto the record, public record, before, you know, she, you know, this is somebody the Justice Department's going to be interested in talking to. If you're going to be talking about Eastman and the false elector scheme, she's somebody who can give you some perspective from inside the West Wing on everything that was happening. Again, she was in a lot of meetings where she helped set them up, or, you know, she was writing memos for these meetings. I mean, she knew who Meadows was talking to all the time. She was somebody who members of Congress dealt with to try to get to Meadows and to the president. So she knows a lot. So I think there's a couple different angles of why they wanted to hurry this. And I do think she had recently changed lawyers, and I think that's a big issue.
Interesting. Well, of course, we haven't heard from Mark Meadows, but this could be as close as we're going to get. John Bresnahan of Punchbowl News, thank you very much. That hearing at 1 p.m. Eastern time, we'll have full coverage of that, too. Still ahead in business, Wall Street is looking like it could rebound from yesterday's losses. We'll get more on what's driving the trading day. That's next with CNBC. Time now for some business news. For that, let's bring in CNBC's Juliana Tattelbaum live from London for us. Juliana, we saw stock futures rising this morning following a losing day to start the week. What should we be looking out for today?
Yeah, Caddy, good morning. Well, yesterday, the incredibly strong run that we saw at the end of last week came to a halt. We saw all the three major indices end of the day slightly lower. But as you said, U.S. futures are pointing to a modestly positive start today. But to put it into context, S&P 500 is on pace for its worst first half since 1970. Today, specifically, investors are going to be looking out for U.S. house price index for April, consumer confidence for June. We're going to get some fresh figures there. A Richmond Fed's manufacturing index is also due out later today. And we're going to get a raft of central bank commentary. So investors will be looking out for any clues around how not only the Fed, but other central bankers around the world are thinking about policy from here. And then, of course, from a geopolitical perspective, investors will be keeping a very close eye on developments in Madrid as NATO meets for its summit.
course, U.S. government officials would love us all to stop spending, but Nike's reported better than expected earnings for its fiscal fourth quarter. Looks like we are still out there dropping money, at least on shoes, despite inflation here in America and all of those lockdowns in China. What's your big takeaway? What's the thinking on the latest thinking on inflation at the moment?
Well, Caddy, for now, consumers seem to be buying sneakers, and the earnings from Nike were resilient. They were better than Wall Street expectations, but still we saw Nike shares pull back in after-hours trade. So why is that? Well, yes, on the positive side, the company said demand for sneakers and sportswear largely held up over the last 3 months. The CFO of Nike said, we continue to closely monitor consumer behavior, and we're not seeing signs of pullback at this point in time, so we continue to execute the strategy. But on the downside, Nike is facing a range of challenges, high transportation costs, longer shipping times, and persistent supply chain issues. And then, to your point, they're also facing the risk that if inflation continues and gas prices, food prices, other prices continue to rise, then consumers may look to pull back on spending on things like sneakers or simply trade down to cheaper brands. So putting it all together, net-net investors, they were a little bit disappointed in what Nike had to say.
And the battle for Spirit Airlines, that doesn't show any signs of letting up. Both JetBlue, Frontier, they've both increased their offers for Spirit. What's the latest in that battle?
Well, this battle has continued to offer twist and turn after twist and turn. The latest, JetBlue has raised its offer yet again for Spirit Airlines. The new offer raises the reverse breakup fee to $400 million from $350 million. This would be paid out if regulators don't approve the deal. It also includes a higher dividend for Spirit shareholders and what's called a ticking fee, basically a very small fee that would be paid out to Spirit shareholders on a monthly basis from January 2023 until the deal closes. Now, this follows Frontier's move on Friday to sweeten its offer for Spirit. All of this should come to a close on Thursday, where Spirit shareholders are due to vote on the Frontier deal.
Okay, CNBC's Juliana Tattelbaum, live from London for us this morning. Thank you very much. Still ahead, we will have new reporting on the growing frustrations inside the Democratic Party following the Supreme Court decision on abortion rights. Way Too Early, coming right back. Following the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe v. Wade, the Washington Post reports that frustration is growing among Democrats about perceived inaction from the top of the party. The Post writes, quote, to an increasingly vocal group of frustrated Democrats, responses by party leaders have been strikingly inadequate to meet a moment of crisis. They criticize the notion that it is on voters to turn out in November when they say Democrats are unwilling to push boundaries and upend the system in defense of hard-won civil liberties. Joining us now, Democratic Congresswoman Madeleine Dean of Pennsylvania. I want to get to what more the Democratic Party could do in a minute, Congresswoman, but I just came back. I spent the day yesterday in Pittsburgh with an abortion provider who was pointing out how critical Pennsylvania now is in this abortion battle. She's already seeing a flood of extra people coming in from Ohio, West Virginia, but Pennsylvania itself could lose its right to abortions in these midterm elections if the Democrats don't keep the governor's mansions. What are the stakes in Pennsylvania at the moment?
The stakes are extremely high. I'm glad to be with you this morning. I actually spoke with Governor Wolf yesterday about this and other issues. Thanks to Governor Wolf, he has been the backstop to protect women and girls' right to their private health care decisions. We have a Republican-led Senate in Pennsylvania legislature, Republican-led House. I was there for 6.5 years. Over and over, they would try to introduce, pass bills that would restrict a woman's right to her own private decisions around health care. So without Governor Wolf, we would be in a very sorry state. But I do want to remind folks in Pennsylvania, abortion is legal in Pennsylvania. But to your point, it is critical, this governor's election, that we elect Josh Shapiro, because Josh Shapiro, who is currently our attorney general, has consistently upheld a woman's right to privacy and her health care choices. Doug Mastriano, the election denier who famously or infamously sold tickets to and participated in the January 6th insurrection, cares nothing for women's rights, does not even believe in abortion services and care. in the event of the extreme cases of incest or life of the mother. So everything is on the line. We have to elect Josh Shapiro, governor, to be that veto pen, to be that backstop. Critically important, as you know, is our Senate race here. Senator Toomey is not seeking re-election. John Fetterman is running and is the Democratic nominee. He, too, will protect a woman's right to choose. We have to pick up at least two more Democratic senators to break through the filibuster in the Senate. So all eyes will be on Pennsylvania for elections up and down the ballot to continue to protect a woman's right to choose.
Yeah, Pennsylvania really has become the front line in the abortion battle. But to that point that the Washington Post is talking about amongst progressives, that there's some frustration that Democrats are just being told, look, this is on you. You've got to turn out and vote in November. And that's pretty much all we can do. Is that a fair criticism of the administration? Could more be being done here in Washington?
I'm not sure that it's a fair criticism of the administration. It is a reflection of the times we are in. I talk to voters all weekend long at rallies. And yes, to a person, we're tired. But elections matter. This is exactly when it is important that we not fatigue, that we not give up, that we not lose hope. Because really, simply, this is a legislative matter, and we need to make it that. You know, back in September, Patty, the House, the U.S. House, passed protection of Roe v. Wade, the codification of Roe v. Wade. We now simply have to stand with that decision and make sure that the Senate will actually uphold it, too. We are the legislative branch. This corrupt Supreme Court, with three members being seated by the most corrupt criminal president the United States has ever seen, they must not have the last word on our rights. And what they've done, when you think of how cynical it is, they claim to have sent this back to the states. And as I said, it's still legal here in Pennsylvania. Please don't anybody be misguided there. They sent it back to the states. What they did was to say that our healthcare choices, my daughters-in-law, my granddaughters' healthcare choices, are now in the hands of politicians. How cynical. We must never let that happen.
And when in the Washington Post reporting, and you've got some progressives saying that the party leadership could be more creative or push more boundaries, is there anything Democratic leadership, are there any tools at the party's disposal that it could use that are not being used at the moment beyond getting out the vote?
I hope that the administration will continue to speak loudly and firmly against this decision by the Supreme Court. We'll continue to talk about what we need to break through is the filibuster, where minority rule keeps us in terrible straits, frankly. The founders never anticipated that a minority would govern the day. And so I hope the administration will continue to speak out, do anything in its power by way of executive orders to protect women's rights. This decision really, it is so sickening and corrupt. It really relegates women and girls to second-class citizen status. The administration must continue to say that and say we will never stand for it.
Mm-hmm. Strong language. Congresswoman Madeleine Dean from Pennsylvania, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Up next, G7 leaders eye a plan to both restrict Russia's cash flow and help stabilize global energy markets. And coming up on Morning Joe, it's primary day for another five states across the country. Steve Kornacki is going to be back at the big board to break down the biggest races. And we'll hear from DNC Chair Jamie Harrison as Democrats hope to harness outrage over abortion rights. We were just hearing about that into electoral engagement. Also ahead, Congressman Ruben Gallego is calling for Justice Department action based on the January 6th committee proceedings. He's going to be joining the conversation ahead of that surprise hearing we spoke about that's scheduled for 1 p.m. this afternoon. Morning Joe is just moments away.
Hey, everyone, it's Chris Hayes. This week on my podcast, Why Is This Happening? We're back with another installment of our special series with Pod 2024, The Stakes. I'm talking to experts about both Joe Biden and Donald Trump's records on specific policy areas during their time as president. This week, economist Kim Clausing on taxes.
underfunding the IRS really serves the interest of dishonest people at the top rather than your typical worker who would benefit from being able to get their questions answered and getting their returns processed in a quick way.
That's this week on Why Is This Happening? Search for Why Is This Happening wherever you're listening right now and follow.